And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. Thursday the 20th of January, it's fast approaching 5 minutes past nine, and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Plenty coming up to keep you entertained and informed, hopefully, and we want your views and opinions and topics as well, of course. Caroline is taking your calls right now on 07491 25000, or if you prefer, you can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Comments come via email to comments@highlandradio.com, and a good morning to you. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Tracy, already saying hello to us as they join to watch on social media, on Facebook /Highland Radio or Highland Radio News and Sport. And if you prefer YouTube, you can hop on to Highland Radio Ireland. And if you're not on social media but you still want to watch the programme, then go to our website, the first port of call, highlandradio.com. You'll see a link for the show there. Click into that and you can watch in browser. Right, okay. Lots coming up on the programme, including a look at the front of the newspapers very shortly. But firstly, just a story that's come across our desks this morning, and it's something we're looking into and following up, and it may be a cause for concern. And it says it relates to the breast services at Letterkenny University Hospital and question marks potentially. Now, this is potentially, and we have to talk about these stories at this point for fear that, you know, it goes under the radar and then an announcement is made and it's all too late to do anything about. I think it's widely known that Dr. McGowan, the consultant radiologist at Letterkenny University Hospital, is to retire at the end of this month. I believe that a retirement was announced a couple of years ago. And her role is seen as crucial in providing the breast services in Donegal, you know, analysing stuff, and then an important part of the cog. Now, I don't know, they've had 2 years to replace Dr. McGowan. I'm not sure at what point did they start advertising that position, if they have at all yet. Again, this is information that we're looking for, but we do understand that a replacement has been secured, but only for 4 weeks. So that would mean that that part of the breast services would continue towards the end of February. But beyond that, we don't know. So that obviously leaves the question, where does that leave breast services as a whole at Letterkenny University Hospital? 2,000 women and men in Donegal could well be affected by this. Now, we do understand, and it's no secret, that the recruitment to Letterkenny University Hospital in all areas is difficult, but particularly as it relates to consultant radiologists. Every hospital around the country is having difficulty in requiring, you know, positions at that level. And, of course, Donegal's remoteness has always made recruitment difficult. So as it stands, that important consultant radiologist position is filled until the end of February. But beyond that, we can reveal there is uncertainty. As I say, there are questions that need to be asked as it relates to, you know, what efforts to date have been made to put in a full-time replacement for Dr. McGowan post January 31st, but now, of course, February 27th or 8th, wouldn't it be? And also, what will this mean to breast services as a whole in Donegal? Because this is an important part of the process, which might have to be done elsewhere, in Galway, for example. So, as I say, it is of significance. We're highlighting it now, not to cause concern, but it's something that we are following up on and we're going to chase up on. I imagine, I hope it's going to be picked up at a political level to try and get some certainty, to get some answers, to get some time frames, because it is a vital cog in breast services in Donegal. And as it stands, Dr. McGowan's position is only covered until the end of February. So obviously we've put our inquiries into Letterkenny University Hospital, into the management there, to the HSE, to Sealta Hospital Group, to try and get answers for you and to try and get some certainty. But as I say, we're mentioning it now, and revealing that news for the first time today, with a view to everyone being aware of what's going on and being part of maybe whatever might be required to ensure there's a continuation of those incredibly important services, not only here in Donegal, of course, but in Letterkenny University Hospital. Okay, we may be, well, I'm sure we'll be returning to that story today, and it's something we might hear quite a bit of over the next while. But anyway, moving on to the front of the newspapers today, we'll start with the locals, of course, and the Tyrconnell Tribune tells us that the construction of a brand new pathway leading to the picturesque Great Fannet Arch in Lochswilly is now in the process of being completed for the new tourism season at Easter. This is positive news. The project is being carried out by Donegal County Council, and the pathway follows on an alternative route to reach the shoreline at the arch. The original right of access had been rendered inoperable when a turnstile became inaccessible to the public. Do you remember that? That's going back a couple of years now. And at the time we were talking about alternative routes and land and car parks and stuff. Well, it seems those hurdles have been overcome, and access to that great arch, the Fannet Great Arch, should be available for the tourism season, starting off in earnest, and also for us locals. Right, the Donegal Democrat: dogs and other animals will have to be kept off 12 Donegal Blue Flag beaches or specified zones on those beaches during bathing season if the beaches are to maintain their special status. We were talking about this on the programme yesterday. Dogs, except assistance dogs, are already banned under criteria for the country's Blue Flag bathing areas, but this has been largely overlooked as it would require changes in most cases to county bylaw structures. And you can read on more in the paper today as it relates to that. Right, the Finn Valley Voice: a change is on the way for the GEA's women, and no woman in Donegal is more aware of that change than our own GEA heroine, former County Secretary Noreen Doherty of Sean McCool's. As from this year, the government and Sport Ireland says that there must be 40% female representation on every NGB in the country or face financial penalties. More from Pat Holland on the front of and inside the Finn Valley Voice today. The Donegal News tells us that Tata Consultancy Services, TCS, I think the more well-known according to the paper, they're formerly Primerica as well, it's admitted that morale within the organisation is not great at the minute and that employees are going through some very difficult times. TCS, which employs 550,000 staff worldwide, bought the Letterkenny branch of Primerica Systems from Prudential Financial in November 2020. The takeover saw Primerica's 1,500-plus workforce transition to the Asian consulting and business solutions firm. But the change of ownership has not been without turbulence. An email sent to employees and provided to the Donegal News reveals discontent over pay and around staffing levels. The Derry News this morning tells us that those who abandoned a hijacked van in one of Derry's most densely populated housing estates, forcing a number of families to be evacuated from their homes in the middle of the night, brought nothing but disruption for local people. That's according to a former mayor. A section of Gallia Park was sealed off for most of yesterday, while the white Volkswagen Caddy van was examined by ammunition technical officers, that's the bomb squad. The vehicle had been hijacked in the adjacent Bracken Park at around 9 p.m. the previous night before being abandoned several hours later in Gallia Park. On to the Nationals now, and there were incredible scenes yesterday, questionable scenes too, and I'm not questioning the passion and the crowds that turned out in Tullamore at the court there, but how it was organised. Firstly, Gardaí said when a court appearance was taking place and gave the time, and secondly, they didn't seem to have any plan to get the accused into the police van and to avoid the crowd. But a man was in custody last night, charged with the murder of Aisling Murphy, 23, just outside Tullamore, County Offaly, last Wednesday. The accused is a 31-year-old Josef Puska. He appeared before a special sitting of Tullamore District Court. Detective Sergeant David Scahill gave evidence of the arrest charge and caution and said Mr. Puska replied no when the charge was put to him at 7:45. Inspector Kieran Keyes applied to Judge Catherine Staines for a remand in custody to Cloverhill Prison, Dublin, to a sitting of Cloverhill District Court next Wednesday. The accused man, wearing a grey hoodie and trousers, was assisted by a Slovakian interpreter in court. Legal aid was granted when the court was told that Mr. Puska of Leilani Grove in Mucklagh, County Offaly, was on a disability payment of €200 per week. Owen Lycett was assigned as his solicitor. Now, that is very much that court case now, and I'm not preaching or saying what anyone should do, but I'm just laying out the facts, is now sub judice. So, in other words, it is not allowed to be talked about. In other words, what you know, there's an awful lot of feeling and passion, and people might say things, right, which is going to happen anyway, but I'm just letting people know that if they don't know, that it is sub judice. So it doesn't matter whether we can't talk about the whether or not someone may or may not have done it or comment on who might or may not be accused, because that could compromise the trial, and it could compromise the Murphy family getting justice down the line, because if things are said on social media or in the mainstream media, though we're heavily governed in what we can say, that could be used for a defence of, you know, the jury's opinions were skewed or, you know, anything like that there. So, as I say, I know passions are running high, and it's something we all feel very deeply, but in terms of commentary on social media, it could very much harm the Murphy's family chance of justice there. The Irish Independent tells us that pubs and restaurants will be permitted to open until midnight from next week under plans being considered by government. Ministers are anxiously awaiting the advice of the National Public Health Emergency Team, but planning's already underway to ditch the 8pm curfew for the hospitality sector as soon as possible. The curfew is expected to be dropped at the latest by Friday, January 28th, but could be removed even earlier next week. Other restrictions that were imposed over Christmas will be lifted on a phased basis. There's also a push in government to allow full capacity at stadiums ahead of Six Nations rugby matches and the return of the GAA National Football and Hurling Leagues. But look, the pressure was put on in Scotland and elsewhere. You can be sure the Six Nations match will be run at full capacity. And it follows confirmation there'll be an extra bank holiday this year on March 18th to remember those who died of COVID and recognise those who worked through the pandemic. But, you know, it's controversial, and we revealed it, I think it was the first time it was revealed nationally on the programme yesterday through Minister Charlie McConnell-Ogue, that it's frontline health workers, and that leaves a lot of people out in the cold. I'm just wondering what you guys think about that. You know, I'm thinking particularly people like home carers, you know, they aren't included at this point. Gardaí, supermarket staff, they're not included in this. You know, I think people who worked in GPs, in GPs offices, nurses, they're excluded from it. They won't get this €1,000 bonus. Or maybe it should be restricted to those who work specifically in health, you know, the very, very, very frontline in patient-facing roles. Maybe it should be restricted to them. What do you think? 086 60 25000, that's your text to WhatsApp. I don't think, does anyone disagree with the frontline health workers getting it? I would be surprised if many do, but maybe you do and your comments are welcome. But also in terms of whom else should qualify, you know, I'm thinking bus drivers. Remember the images right at the very start of bus drivers sitting on buses without masks and a bus absolutely wedged and everyone was up to high dough, not knowing what was to come. School bus drivers as well, driving buses at 100% capacity when other bus drivers were driving buses at reduced capacity. You know, where would it end, or where do you think it should be extended to? A panel is being established to see if it goes beyond or can go beyond what's already been announced, but it seems the message from government very clearly is that they have to draw a line. It's going to upset people, but it's particularly those in frontline patient-facing healthcare and in nursing homes. Okay. The Irish Farmers Journal, intense farmer competition for rental land has pushed the price of leased ground to unprecedented levels. Land lease prices have increased by between 5 and 15% on 2021, with good quality grazing ground generally making between €220 an acre and €270. This is up €20 on last year. Right, on to the Daily Mail now, and RTE has said the TV licence fee system is utterly broken and not fit for purpose, as it warned that it will not be able to deliver its remit without more funding. It comes as licence fee evasions rose to 15.2% in 2020, up 2.6 points from 2019. So, you know, 15 out of 100 people just aren't paying it. However, RTE insisted to the Irish Daily Mail yesterday that it has no plans to call for the licence fee to be increased. RTE Director General Dee Forbes will appear before the Oireachtas Public Accounts Committee this morning to discuss the national broadcaster's accounts for 2020. Ms Forbes will tell TDs that RTE is losing, and this is with a licence fee and ad revenue, €65 million a year due to problems with the licence fee. Now, I have some of the stuff you like. The money they give away, for instance, obviously they pay, you know, they pay huge wages to their staff, which is, you know, that's fine if they can get it, that's all well and good. But they give massive amounts of monies away. Like, they start a new show and they can give $5,000 away. And I'm thinking, well, how many, you know, 180-odd euros does it take for you to just pull $5,000 out of the air to promote a show as part of a giveaway? It's fantastic if you can do it. And that's just one thing. There is, they do seem to confetti money around them to some extent to try and get people to watch and listen more. But that is the public's own money that they're using to do that. But anyway, RTE has highlighted for many years that the licence fee system on which Ireland's national broad public service media is reliant is utterly broken. She will say evasion in 2020 reached 15.2%. In addition, the number of no TV homes has grown to 15.1%. And RTE will argue that these users, while not required to pay a licence fee, can access RTE programming online. The result, this results in €35 million being lost. The broadcaster says, with an overall losses estimated to be €65 million annually. Now, all of that licence fee money you pay, by the way, doesn't go to Highland Radio or Ocean FM or Galway Bay FM. It all goes to RTE. Virgin Media have to operate without licence fee money for the most part as well. Any news talk, any independent, it's only RTE that money goes to, by the way. Some of it goes into a fund for documentaries or something or other. I'm not familiar with that. But all your other media, except for RTE, is funded through advertisements. So when we talk about the licence fee, it is only for RTE, just to be clear on that. The Irish Daily Star, the Taoiseach has said he wants to provide clarity to students about the form the Leaving Cert will take as quickly as we possibly can. Taking questions from Labour leader Alan Kelly in the Dáil yesterday, Micheál Martin said he understood the stress that students were under due to the disruption caused by COVID-19. We'll rattle through these last couple here now. The Irish Daily Mirror, Justice Minister Helen McEntee plans to publish legislation which will include new offences for stalking and non-fatal strangulation. She made the announcement during statements in the Dáil as violence against women in the wake of the murder of Aisling Murphy. And you know, politicians aren't going to agree on all things, but there seems to be a unity in the Dáil in addressing that issue, and rightly so. And finally, internationally, deadly anti-tank missiles have arrived in Ukraine amid fears Russia could invade in days. This is The Sun. The weapons are designed to kill Russian battle tanks in the event of an invasion and equip Ukraines or Ukrainian guerrillas who will carry on the fight. It comes as the UK invited Kremlin chiefs to London for crunch talks. However, Russia maintained a tough posture yesterday amid the tensions over its troops build-up. All right. We're joined on it now by Deputy Piers Doherty, who's Sinn Féin's spokesperson on finance. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. I mean, this news we revealed this morning, as I say, you know, we don't have all of the information, but enough, I think, to sort of put it out into the public domain, because it will be of a great concern, and it's far better to try and speak about these things in advance of them coming to pass rather than sort of reacting when they have. And that's the news that Dr. McGowan, the consultant radiologist at Letterkenny University Hospital, she is set to retire at the end of this month. Now, that has been on the cards for 2 full years. We understand they have a replacement for 4 weeks, but after that, this crucial role in providing breast services in Donegal, there are question marks. Now, we don't know, have they tried to hire anyone yet? We'd hope they have, but of course, you know, recruitment is difficult, particularly in the area of consultant radiologists. But this does, at this point, until such time as we get further information from the hospital or the HSE, it does raise serious concerns, I think it's fair to say, over breast services in Donegal. It's something that really needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency, I'd imagine, Deputy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the news that's coming from yourselves and Highland Radio this morning will come as a concern to many women right across the county of Donegal. Obviously, campaigners have fought hard to retain services, to increase services here in the county. And the idea now that a well-flagged position is to become vacant and that there's no permanent solution or no permanent position to be filled is not helpful. And I think, Greg, that this comes at a really bad time because we've obviously are in the midst of a pandemic. Thankfully, I think we're on the right side of it now, and all hoping for these restrictions to be eased in the next wee while. But as one of the results of the pandemic, we've had delayed diagnosis, we've had delayed checks and breast check, and all that has been affected as well. So the idea that we'd try to be doing a catch-up program without the necessary staff or without being able to deliver that program will be seriously worrying. So
yeah, and I think the problems are underlined when we have an official statement saying that, you know, breast check is prioritizing symptomatic women for their service. And the whole idea of breast check, it's a screening service. You don't prioritize, I mean, obviously you have to prioritize those with symptoms, but the whole idea is, isn't it, that this is a screening service, that you even catch people before they're symptomatic and offer the best outcomes.
Exactly, and you know, there's been a huge success in terms of breast check in that program, and that's exactly where we need to go, where we can screen beforehand and detect cancers before there's any symptoms. Obviously the outcomes are far greater. So you know, there is a big problem. There's a problem right across the country in terms of catch up. There has been misdiagnosis, delayed treatment as a result of the pandemic, but you know, we have a big program of catch up to do, and now to go in and try to deal with that, possibly with one hand held behind our back in the form of not having this replacement for the consultant radiologist. Myself and Padraig McLaughlin, TD, and Jerry McMonagle, who's also on the board of the SEALTA group, has written this morning to SEALTA and to Sean Murphy. We've copied Sean Murphy into this in relation to finding some of the clear answers, I think, that we all need today. What attempts have been made to recruit this position? Has there been delays or blockages at a national level? Because there's a terrible bureaucratic system that you have to go through to fulfill, to even get approval to actually go to look for a post. What happens after the 4 weeks? One of the things, Greg, you know, as part of the hospital grouping, Letterkenny doesn't stand on its own anymore. It's part of the SEALTA grouping. So therefore, there's a responsibility on SEALTA to make sure that healthcare is provided to all of the regions in which it covers. And therefore, they have a responsibility to make sure that adequate cover is provided to Donegal. And the solution of just, well, travel to Galway isn't acceptable. Mm. That's not on the cards, in my view. We need to actually make sure it's delivered here in the region.
Yeah, and I mean, we were told there was going to be delivery of a second breast surgeon. Is that breast surgeon actually dedicated to work in that area? That's another question that perhaps needs to be answered. Separately, I don't think anyone, including yourselves, would be opposed to our frontline health workers receiving this €1,000 bonus, pandemic bonus, whatever one might want, like to call it. Obviously, though, there are those, Gardaí, for example. Those in retail, family carers in particular, those working in GPs, and the list goes on. If it were Sinn Féin, how far would you go? Or do you understand that to some extent the government has to have a cut-off, and those on the front line of health, you know, really perhaps, you know, were the actual real front line? Not that's not to put anyone else down, but I hope you know the point I'm trying to make.
I understand the question. I think, well, first of all, we argued something kind of different. At the start of the pandemic, we argued for a hospitality voucher that is similar to what happens in the north. It would be €200 per person and €100 per child. And that's where you can spend money to support the hospitality sector. As the pandemic went on, we said, look, why not take that idea and give it as a bonus to everybody to help, who helped us come through this pandemic, and also would help, obviously, the sector that would be most affected, and that being tourism, hospitality, and all the rest. So it would be type of a voucher. Obviously, the government didn't go with that. Therefore, we campaigned on a voucher for frontline health workers. And you know, look, let me say this: everybody has pulled together. There's absolutely no doubt. Others have gone beyond the call of duty, and they are in our public services, you know, way beyond the issue of health. But I think, and I think it's fair enough to say that those working in our frontline health services were more at risk and therefore deserve that special that attention. And that's the reality. Like, people went into our hospital, knowing that there was COVID on the wards and knowing that they were at risk of infection, and maybe different from today, Greg, where, you know, so many people have had COVID, so many people thankfully have come through it. Unfortunately, we've lost 9,000 people across the island. But in those early days, we didn't know. We didn't know the impact of, you know, how it would affect us and all the rest. And people turned up, and I think it's time now to respond back. You mentioned family carers. Family carers are frontline health workers. That's my view. It's the view of this party, and they should be involved in this. And not only that, it's like family carers were left behind during this period. The support that they depended on, the respite support, they were all taken from them. The day services were closed down, and they were left to provide that support without, you know, to do what they always did, but to do it without any of those external supports. So we've always recognised that they're frontline health workers.
Well, beyond that then, and I mean, let's just say we can broaden it out to include, you know, that frontline health workers is a broader terminology. And I think a panel is being established to look at that. So that catches in a lot of the individual groupings I talked to you about. But from your party's perspective, what about the likes of Angada Síochána members? What about those who were working in retail or those in in other areas? School bus drivers, they were driving 100% full buses when others were at reduced capacity. Would you see it extended out, or is that where you would employ the voucher scheme in tandem?
Let me be clear, we're not calling for that recognition bonus to be extended to all sectors, because you can go the Gardaí, you can go those who kept their shops open, those who stacked their shelves, those who delivered their parcels as we were shopping from home and as we were isolating or cocooning at the earlier stage. You know, there's so many people who turned up to make sure that things kept going. And the recognition bonus, we believe, does need to be targeted at health workers that are beyond, as I said, the definition that was announced by the government yesterday. But there are other ways to recognise the contribution made by other public sector workers, and indeed private sector workers, and indeed, you know, people who just kept things going. There's people in the community sector in Donegal, our unsung heroes, who came together, and I know them. I know people like in Enid Mhuire Páilc Dóir and other groups who came together to make sure that, you know, food, meals, essentials were delivered to people at the earlier days of this pandemic to make sure that they were isolated. So there is a way, and that's why we argued, you know, Greg, that you would have a hospitality voucher. So across the border, you have this thing of it was £100 sterling for every adult over the age of 18. It was called a high street retail voucher. That was basically a recognition that we came through this together. And I think there is a way to actually recognise other workers through a type of incentive like that.
And of course the cost of it is less than the face value of it, but that's what the bank holiday is for. Does the bank holiday, or the public holiday, sorry, I prefer to say the public holiday, does that not thank all those groups that you talk of? Maybe they might get double pay for that day if they have to work on that day, or they'll get a day in lieu. I mean, is that not really our version of the high street voucher, you know, a day in the bag?
Yeah, look, the bank holiday is welcome. We've always, like, if you look at international comparison, we've less bank holidays than our peers. So, you know, that's something we've always argued, that there should be a bank holiday to recognise the 1916 rising, something that doesn't actually, that isn't there. But it's now set for La Fela Bridges. So that is to be welcome, and it will come as a benefit for many of those public sector workers. They're going to have to work those bank holidays. They might get obviously additional pay. But I think there was something else that could have been done. And, you know, and as I said, it's not just about a recognition to individuals, but it also actually could have helped that sector, that the sector that's probably most affected. Because like when you lose about 8 million euro people coming into your country every year through flights, like that's not going to happen. There's no switch here where all of them are coming back. There's going to be hesitancy in terms of international travel.
I don't know. I personally think, and this is by the by, I think as soon as people are told, right, you can go now, they'll go now. I think things will change very, very quickly. You know, we're just waiting for it to be.
Yeah, there is pent up demand. There's absolutely no doubt about it. There's pent up demand, but there is also concern, because, like, you know, you're going to, when we get out of this here, you're going to have big numbers. But we always needed to get to a point where, the virus was like the flu, you know, and every year you know if you're vulnerable, if you're over a certain age, you get the flu jab, and that protects you in terms of serious illness. It still means you can get the flu, and that's where we need to go to. Hopefully that's where we're going, hopefully that's where we're coming to. But there'll still be reluctance in some, and even if it's like 90% of the people, that's still, you know, losing up to nearly a million international travelers, okay, you know, coming to the country. And that's that's why I'm saying that, you know, there's going to be a longer tail on some sectors than others in terms of bounce back. Okay. People, I have no doubt, will be going to the pubs, will all be wanting to go to the restaurants, but it's a question of, you know, some maybe elderly people, will they be coming, will they be flying across the Atlantic?
Mm. Sometimes it's the older generation that want to go in for a hug. I've noticed in, you know, the younger ones, the younger people can be, you know, step back a bit, but some of the older generation, they're the ones that want to continue to shake hands and give you an embrace. But anyway, I'll not comment
they understand the value of the hug and the embrace.
And I'm not going to comment as to whether I accepted those embraces or not. That could be the subject of an inquiry down the line. Finally, and the reason we actually initially invited you on, I believe, was you know, we struggle enough with public transport here and what we have and connectivity. A key service provided by Bus Éireann, it's off and on like a light switch, seemingly. What's going on here?
Yeah, there's serious problems with the particular service in Bus Éireann, and that's the 30 and 30X, and that's the service from Donegal Town that goes to Dublin. It runs numerous times during the day, so it's different times. So, for example, one of the buses leaves outside the Abbey there at 1 o'clock in the morning, and many people would use that bus service either in Donegal, but it also travels through Cavan, so people would use it there as well. They use it to get to the airport to get an early flight, maybe back to London or to Manchester, wherever they need to go, as they've returned home for a long weekend or so on and so forth. What's happened, Greg, is that over the last 2 years, the bus hasn't turned up on average 100 times each year. So basically, people are standing at the side of the road in the dark of night, and the bus doesn't turn up. And that's happened far too often. As I said, we can all understand buses breaking down, maybe somebody getting sick, we're in the middle of the pandemic, all of that. But when it happens like about 108 times 1 year, and up until October last year, it was nearly 80 times, and it increased during Christmas, then that's not acceptable.
What was the excuse Bus Éireann gave?
Yeah, well, they basically said it was down to drivers in the main, illness and so on, and unavailability. The problem here is that they weren't notifying people as well, so there was a serious frustration, and people didn't have a second option. Like, what do you do when you have no car and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, your flight's going at 7?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people spent a lot of money on taxis individually and just took the hit on that, don't hear about it because they didn't do it collectively.
Yeah, we've got cases here now, like, you know, 400, 500 euro to rebook a flight because they need to get to work and so on and so forth. So there was all of those issues. But what was happening was Bus Éireann weren't also notifying people. Mm. They weren't putting up their website that was cancelled. So we met with Bus Éireann and the senior executive, myself and Councillor Noel Jordan, recently. So there, and we've been raising this in the Dáil over the last number of months with a number of ministers, including the Taoiseach. So a couple of things have happened in the last wee while, which hopefully will help that. First of all, they've invested about 1.5 million additional in the bus fleet in Donegal. So they've put three other buses into Stranorla, which is the main depot, that will help in terms of bus breakdown. So they think that will alleviate that problem in terms of the bus part of it. The second part of it is in terms of the driver availability. Now, we've argued that they should employ more relief drivers. They're not going to do that. But what they have done is they're engaging with the union in relation to a more friendly roster that they think will help that. And that's up to basically the unions and management to try and work that out. But we've also said, well, you know, where it happens that somebody is sick, it's last minute, or the bus breaks down, you need to have another option bar cancelling it. So they are looking at a local firm that would be able to step into the breach in those exceptional circumstances. So what they've agreed to do, Greg, is to give myself and Councillor Jordan regular reports in relation to this to see if it's working, and if it's not, then we have to look at it again. Okay. They're also committed to make sure that where there is a cancellation, it does go up on the website, and looking at things like, if you have a travel pass, for example, you can't pre-book the bus, so there's no point. You know, if you've pre-booked, they send you an email to say it's cancelled. But if you have a travel pass, which many people do, then there's no way that they can contact you. So they're looking at that as well.
Okay, yeah, and they committed to looking at that a long time ago on this program as well. All right, Deputy Piers Doherty, thank you very much for that. He is Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance. Any comment on any of what you've just heard? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, or call 07491 25,000. Okay, you're very welcome back to the program. Some of your comments here. Yeah, the public holiday will definitely help the self-employed, who, as per usual, prop up the economy, and it is definitely those going to affect particularly SMEs. Or those without, you know, large profits, it's going to affect them. Don't mind frontline healthcare workers getting it, but can't understand why armed personnel are getting it. They were only directing people at vaccine centres, which was good, but still don't think it entitles them to a bonus. Another caller says, I'm a healthcare worker for primary care via the HSE. Am I entitled to this allowance, or is it just those in clinical settings? I don't want to mislead anyone. I'm not 100% sure the answer to that question. I was just wondering, I'm lost with rule changes and can't find info on the HSE website. Are over 40 close contact unvaccinated? Isolation time, some tell me 14, others tell me 10. Sorry for the inconvenience. I believe it to be 10, you know. Hi, Greg. In relation to frontline workers getting the €1,000 bonus, what about the HSE receptionist that lives beside us that had 5 or 6 house parties during lockdown and then continued to work on the frontline in the morning again? These people were a major factor in outbreaks in our health system and ultimately people getting really ill. So do you think that people like this person should be rewarded by getting 100K for flouting the laws of this country? I think not. Well, I mean, you know, like, I don't know what you saw through your curtains. Maybe it wasn't exactly as things panned out. But when they were in that hospital setting, they were tested routinely for COVID. So I doubt they would have been present at work if they had COVID. Also, they probably would have been in PPE and what have you. I'm not trying to contradict you here, but you know the problem, particularly with COVID in hospital, is patients bringing COVID into the hospital. But I understand where you're coming from, and you probably lived your life right according to the guidelines, and that's probably what also not angers you, but upsets you, or whatever word you want to use is you. Rightio. Okay, now let's talk about the access to the Great Arch in Fannet, as covered on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune today. It's an issue we've covered in this programme as well, so it's great to see it progress. Councillor Liam Blaney joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Councillor.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Right, this is good to see, isn't it? Perhaps not as quickly as we would have hoped, but it's along the lines of what yourself and myself said. It wasn't me, you were telling me, what was possibly going to be a solution to this situation.
Well, look, it's unfortunate it took as long as it did, but at the beginning there was, some local people down there was offering land for access and for car park, but unfortunately they were, in my opinion, just trying to delay the whole process. And when we found that out, we got on contact with new landowners, and thankfully these new landowners worked with the council, and the contracts took a wee while to get drawn up and everything, but The main tourists, the contractor moved in there about 3 weeks ago. This is his third week now in it, and he had the pathway constructed to the arch, and there's fencing and a lot of things to do yet on the pathway. But it started, and hopefully that the pathway will be completed and fencing and everything completed by the end of February, and then he's going to do a bit of work on the car park, and hopefully by the end of March the whole job will be completed in it.
How does access now compare to what was there before that controversial turnstile was put in place? Is it a longer walk? Maybe it's a better walk, is it? I don't know.
Well, for anybody who went down there and didn't know what a Great Arch was, I went down as far as the gate into private property. You went onto that private property and it's wide open land, and you didn't know where to go. And it took a bit of looking to get it, but this is an access now that takes you directly to the front of the arch. And as we fenced off, it's going to be safer for people to use. And I think that's an important thing. And hopefully that people will make great use of it now. I know it has been stopped for the last number of years, but I think get the word out now again. I have to thank Donegal County Council for the work they've done as well. Mm-hmm. And ensuring, first of all, that funding was in place for it and the work got on to try and get the contracts signed and get everything sorted. And
yeah, because it's quite frustrating. Like, we went down to have a look at it during the summer, and it, you know, this beautiful thing, but you could only get a glimpse of it. There was no access signs everywhere sort of saying, you know, get out of here, effectively. And, you know, tourists would be landing there as well, following Google Maps, because it's well flagged on Google Maps. And then you'd have comments saying, just ignore the signs, jump the fence, or, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You know, so if you're from outside the area coming, you go, well, what's going on here? So this is really positive, isn't it? This is part of, you know, a people's day out. They might go up and look at the lighthouse. They might go here and then they'll go on and have a cup of coffee somewhere else and visit another part of Donegal. Like, it's essential, isn't it, that we have proper and safe access to some of these amazing, you know, natural amenities that we have.
It is important, I think, that we have safe access to it. And look, this access does not stop people that maintain they have a right on their property to fight for that right. It's an access that's going to be easy for people to get down to the arch without any problems, both safety and for not trespassing on other people's ground. And I think it's a very positive story. And unfortunately, as you said already, it took a bit of time to get this far. But we are here now, and hopefully come Easter that will be the good news story spread all over the place. Mm. And the word will be that Fannada is welcoming visitors to the area to come to see the Great Arch, as well as the Lighthouse, and as well as Knockalla Coast Road and numerous other things, and across the bridge over into Downings. And there's other
access issues in that area as well. Is that why
we're working on, Greg? And I don't know. Unfortunately, these give us an update.
Give us an update on access to Murder Hole, then. I presume that's what you're sort of suggesting. You're leaning towards. Is there any progress being made there?
The access to Murder Hole is like this. It's slow progress, and I do hope, but it's going to take time. I do hope through time that we will have access to it.
Mm. Yeah, as I say, because, you know, our eyes were opened up particularly to these beautiful areas right across the, and I'm thinking of the, you know, the beautiful waterfall down in the Killybegs Kilcar direction. You know, when we were doing more visiting in our own county, many of us did, our eyes were opened to what we have. And you know, the more people that can enjoy them, but as well as that, not to disrupt people, local landowners or local people that live there. They have to live there 365 days a year. We're striking balances, and I think that's what's happened here at the Arch. Hopefully that's what happens at Murder Hole and what happens at other, you know, other attractions around the county. The car park, incidentally, well, it's not incidental, it's quite important. Is it a large car park that's being provided there? A few spaces, or...?
Yeah, well, I think it's supposed to hold about maybe roughly about 20 cars and a few buses, but it's a wee bit further away. It's about 500 metres back up the road from the access down to the arch. But look, it is a walk. It's not something that you're going to be able to drive down to, so the distance away for the car park, I don't see it as a problem.
Yeah, and in terms of access to the arch, is it, as far as you're aware, is it to a good viewing point, or would it be access down onto the Stony Beach there?
That'll be good access to it, Greg.
Is that okay? That's a mysterious answer. I'm intrigued. Okay, listen, in other words, you'll get to a viewing point, and what you do after that's your own problem, is that it?
And as you go down as well, you'll get a great view of it as you're walking down towards it. You go down the bottom, go back and look at it as you're walking over towards it, and there's going to be great access to it. Easy access to it for anybody, all ages, whether it's buggies or disabled or anybody at all.
Brilliant.
Although
stuff.
It's a bit of a climb back up again, but look, it is a good access, and I think it's great news.
And you know what, if it took an extra season to get it right, so be it. We'll look forward. Councillor Blaney, thanks as always. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Okay, so we were talking about a beautiful part of North Donegal, and you know, you would go a long way to rival the beauty even further north on the Inishowen Peninsula, and certainly it has some beautiful areas, and we're going to talk about one of those now with Liam. Good morning to you, Liam.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Right. Now, you use the beautiful facility of that wooded area near Straggle Beach. Now, what's your experience there, Liam?
My experience is... has been negative over the years. There's been a lot of dumping going on over the fence on that particular road, known locally as Plankton Road, which leads to Stragill Beach. Stragill Beach can be quite littered as well, and a couple of us the other day went, three of us did a bit of picking up litter on the beach. And then a local man and his wife picked up the litter at the black spot, I call it, on that beautiful road. And there's a lot of litter picked up, including toolboxes and things like that. Mm. But it's been going on for a number of years. But a year ago, a local people gathered and did a very, very good litter pick and gathered a lot of litter from that particular road, and it was collected. And I was out walking on Christmas Day, and I was very disappointed to see it litter in it again, quite a bit.
And Liam, do you believe people are pulling up in a car, dumping out the household rubbish out the boot, or is it lots of small amounts of littering and it just gathers up over time? Like, what's happening as far as you can determine, Liam?
Well, a lot of people are wondering how it's getting there, and nobody seems to be able to see anybody doing anything. It could be done in the dark of night. We don't know. Yeah. We can't establish who's actually doing it. It's not small bits of litter. It's in a little wooded area, and there's a little stream that flows beside. In the past, things such as washing machines and, you know, big things were taken out of it and brought out onto the road, and it looks very unsightly as you pass it by.
I mean, where are these mobile cameras the council talked of? That, you know, you don't know where they might be. They might be at Stragill Beach this week. They might be in another dumping black spot another week. You know, where's the deterrent here? It can't be up to you guys to have to go out and clean up, or get the council to do it. You know, we need to be proactive here, don't we, Liam?
Yeah. Well, in that light, Greg, I'm trying to set up a little group. I think the future is local groups taking charge of their own areas, and you know, you have to work obviously with the council and in collaboration with them. But I've just set up a little group, and I'm calling it Meher Kranika. You know, initially it's small, but we've set up a little WhatsApp group. No, people in the locality, they're doing that already. They have done it in that area already. But I think cameras would be one of the answers, could be mm-hmm. a solution.
They're like the speed vans. You don't know where they might be. So in other words, people don't risk it. But people who are dumping it in this area near Stragill Beach, be on notice. The local community are working together, and they are the eyes and ears. And if you do it into the future, you may well be spotted doing so and then face the consequences. Right, Liam, listen, thanks for that. Thanks for highlighting it. Let us know in the future if you need any further assistance in getting the message out. Okay, thanks, Liam, and well done to you and everyone who's trying to tackle that yourselves. Okay.
With all the stories that matter across the Northwest, it's Greg Hughes on the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio.
All right, Tanya, welcome back to the program. The jackpot bingo numbers are on the way. Stay tuned for that. Just want to run through a couple of your comments before we get to that. There is a crossroads in Killygordon with four stop signs, one at each junction. Can anyone explain who is the right of way on it? Because I use it every day and have no idea who is the right of way. So there are four actual stop signs. Presumably you stop and you see what's happening. If it's someone across the way, you can both go. It sorts itself out. You've confused me there now. I've never seen a junction with four stop signs that I remember. But you give... I can't answer. I don't know. Let me know. I know how to drive. I can't filter out the information out of my head as we speak. Elfa Caratidy Town did a beach clean-up on Sunday, lifting rubbish. It seems ongoing all over the place. Well done to the people of Falkari in doing so. Sad to hear they've improved access to the arch at Dobeg. Always thought finding and getting to the arch was more exciting than the feature itself. I understand that, but listen, I'm a wee bit timid, believe it or not. And we went up to have a look at it, and I saw all the signs, and I was like, right, I don't want any confrontation or to get into any bother, and I left. And I think a lot of people would like that. There's some people more adventurous and more, they don't give one and might enjoy that adventure side of things. But for a lot of us, we kind of need to know it's okay for us to to go. I was wondering if you could read this out for me. I'm organising a tractor run. It's the Boyle Agri Tractor Run for IMNDA. It's motor neurone disease. As my father has been diagnosed mid last year. The run is taking place from the home yard, Erity, in Manor Cunningham. I would appreciate a short shout out on the radio, if possible. There's a link for donation online too. And that comes in from Manny Boyle. So if you go to Just Giving and you search Boyle Agri, so go to Just Giving, search Boyle Agri, and if you want to support Manny there in his tractor run, although he doesn't say when it's happening, if you want to get him back in touch with us, Manny, there might be others that want to join you, or maybe you've already got the capacity there. A caller says the head of the HSE does not care about the hospital in County Donegal. It's only a short trip to him, for him too, from Leitrim. I'm sure you'd hope he would be up relatively regularly. Morning, Greg. My sister works as a family support worker in the community and voluntary sector and worked all through the pandemic delivering food and clothes to families with young children in the county. This sector is already underpaid and undervalued by the government and should definitely be included in this payment. Thank you for highlighting these important issues. It's our pleasure. It's not our pleasure. It's our job. It's what we want to do, if you understand. Any news coming through from the Donegal community in Belarus? We've heard nothing. What about our bin men? They've been working longer hours and never stopped since the start of the pandemic. Yeah, indeed, you could say. But did they face, a lot of us worked through the entire pandemic, but did they face the same dangers and stresses that someone working as a frontline health worker might have, I wonder? Access RTE, have RTE and I've never found anything to watch on it. Why don't they scrap it? I think in 2021, forcing people to pay for a service they may or may not access, to me, is outdated, and it doesn't matter if it's RTE, the BBC, or any service whatsoever. I mean, imagine being compelled to pay for Sky, for example. You would go, what? You know, it's a choice you make, and you can choose what parts of that their packages, though I haven't for a long time, what packages to watch. Do I like sport? Do I like movies? With the likes of the RTE and BBC, they're saying you have to pay for this. You have to pay huge salaries, and they are huge salaries. And you've no choice, and this is the programme, like it or lump it. I mean, there's an ad for Serviu going at the moment as well. I don't know if you've heard it, but it says it's free. You know, free Serviu. It's free to you, free, free, free. And then at the end of the advert, it says you must have a TV licence to access it. That's not free. And it's an advert. I don't know how that got past whoever looks at ads, because something that you have to pay a license fee for to watch is not free. Yet they spend the whole ad saying it's free and then say you have to get a TV license. And also, to, you know, the money that's being paid to people is it's ridiculous. I think, you know, paying people hundreds of thousands of euro it's obscene for the job that they do. It's an easy job, okay? They shouldn't be paid these amounts of money. The old argument was back in the day when Pat Kenny was a younger man and Gay Byrne was there and, you know, Ian Dempsey was a younger fella working for RTE. The argument was, is look, if we don't pay these boys this money, you know, they'll be snapped up by Radio Ireland or Today FM or BBC or the United States. That's the argument they used to say, but that's nonsense. If any of the people I've mentioned were to lose their jobs tomorrow, they'd struggle to get another job the next day, and they would never get a job that pays the same amount of money. Even Ryan Tuberty, the highest paid of them all, only had a fleeting experience of working in England, and it was for holiday cover, and I don't think that happens any longer. Maybe he's too busy. But, you know, those type of things need to be looked at, and it's only in the context of us being compelled to make this payment. We're compelled to, we've no choice, and it doesn't go to News Talk, it doesn't go to Virgin, as I said earlier, it doesn't come here, you know, it's simply just to pay the staff and for the services at RTE. Okay, so dogs and other animals will have to be kept off 12 Donegal Blue Flag beaches or specified zones on those beaches during bathing seasons if the beaches are to maintain their special status. Now, these beaches are Coldaff and Danning, Shrove, Port Salon, Marble Hill, Killahoe, that's in Dunfanaghy, of course, Carrickfinn, Nairn, Fintra, Merva, Rosnalla, Bundoran. All of these places are used regularly by people to run their dogs. They're supposed to be on leads, though, I suppose, or exercise horses or whatever it might be. These, you know, you might have moved to Donegal because you're an animal lover and you think, you know, there's so many beautiful areas for me to enjoy time with my pet. But as I say, if we are to retain the blue flag status, there are at least going to be restrictions, it seems. And this is off the back of a directive from the Blue Flag International and Ontashka. They sent these criteria out to local authorities. Right, Kathleen joins us on the programme now. Kathleen, what do you think about this?
Well, it makes me very angry, actually, whenever I see it. I can understand why people want to keep the beaches clean. I'm all for that, 100%. I'm totally behind it. But they need to have an alternative for where dogs should go, because it's the only place that lots of dogs can go where they can have a bit of space to run and not get tangled in things if they're on a very long lead and things like that. You know, there are other animals that use the beach too. Cats go down there and they poop on beaches. Seals come out, they poop on beaches. Birds poop on. I mean, are all these animals supposed to disappear overnight? You know, quiet dogs, you know, mainly. So I know that there are a lot of dogs. There are thousands of dogs in this county. But they need somewhere to go as a replacement, because they have nowhere to go. Everywhere you go, it says, keep your dog on a leash, keep your dog on a leash. And in other towns and cities, there are dog parks. There are places where dogs can run freely and have fun and do what dogs do. But there's nothing here, and it's a crying shame, to be honest.
Is it about the dog mess, though? Because that means we've given up on people cleaning up dog fouling. Or, you know, is it about the user experience at the beach? I haven't been fully able to determine that. But, I mean, if it is about mess, you make some good points as it relates to other animals. But also, does that mean we've given up on requesting people to clean up after themselves?
Yeah, well, it's a mixture of both. You make a good point there, because the beach is supposed to be user-friendly for everybody. And people who are scared of dogs, people who don't like dogs, people of all kinds go onto beaches, and they don't want to be bothered by dogs running up to them. But if somebody's down there and it's quiet time and they have a dog on maybe a 20-metre line where they can run around freely, they can run into the water and bring us out, but they can't run all over the place. And then you can bring them back in beside you if you see somebody coming along. There's no harm in that. You know, there are a lot of responsible dog owners in the county, but there are irresponsible people everywhere in every walk of life, and there will always be irresponsible people. And you do have to keep after them and ask them to, you know.
Well, that's it, because, Kathleen, the rationale, apparently, I see here for restricting access of domesticated animals to beaches is that amongst the most common hazards in bathing waters are microbial pathogens introduced by fecal contamination from humans and animals. So, surely, the first option is to rigorously enforce or at least do a major publicity campaign to make sure that people take the dog poo home with them, because
absolutely, and their own, because they often go down there and light campfires as well and do what they want.
That's quite true, and they think digging a hole sorts the problems out, but it doesn't. Kathleen, this is about retaining our blue flag status of these beaches, right? Is it a price worth paying? Do you know, like, we still have the beaches, they're still beautiful, people will visit, but should we say, right, you know what, if it means giving up the blue flag, we want to retain these beaches for people to enjoy, you know, their family and their pets on them. Do you know what I mean? Should we sacrifice the blue flag status to retain what we have?
Well, that's a bigger question for other people as well, because, I mean, I can only have my personal opinion on that, but other people would say, oh, we can't do that, we can't do this. And they would agree or disagree willy-nilly. Maybe we should hold a poll on that one. But, you know, my point really is that, you know, I'm all for blue flag beaches. I love having clean beaches. We love having, you know, everybody thinking that the beaches are safe to use and clean to use. But it's not the case all year round, because, I mean, people are people at the end of the day, and they do what people do. So some people are responsible, some people are not. And there should be, I mean, can people police beaches to make sure that nobody is dropping poop and things? That can be difficult. So we're trying to rely on people's own discretion and, you know, their own sense of responsibility and things like that. But, you know, the alternative is there is nowhere else for these dogs to go, and dogs need to roam, they need to play, they need to run, but it needs to be a properly designed space. Just saying there's a field, off you go, is not good enough.
But, you know, when we flagged this yesterday, no pun intended, Kathleen, it was the people that were texting in. They weren't worried about necessarily the poo on the beach. They were worried, or the status of the water. It was having a fear of dogs, or dogs running up to them, or, you know, even dogs on long leads. They were being put off going to the beach because of their fear of dogs, you know. So yeah. I think what this might end up doing is pleasing a lot of people who aren't interested really about necessarily whether the water's being contaminated. They want to use the beaches without the threat of a dog, because we've all seen it. where someone sees their dog as a member of the family, which it is, they think it's harmless and it's running and they think it's cute when it runs up to people sitting on a blanket. But the people sitting on the blanket are bricking it because they've got a an inherent fear of dogs. You know.
Yes, and a fear of dogs is an incredibly real thing and a terrifying thing for people. And my heart goes out to them. And it really, and they do have a right to walk on that beach without being interfered with. And people who let their dogs run and don't have them under control are contributing to an awful lot of backlash from people who want to enjoy the beach. And they're making it hard for other dog lovers as well and dog owners who are responsible and who take good care of their dogs and keep them under control.
I would be very worried if we cannot come up with a solution to something like this, whereby dog owners are accommodated, people who fear dogs are accommodated, and we maintain an acceptable quality of water. If we can't fix something like this or come up with a solution without an all right ban, I would worry if we actually can resolve any of our issues in our country.
Yeah, well, I'm all for it. I'm all for whatever solution, you know, is workable. And as you say, if everybody gets something out of it, that's great. But on top of that, I would say, like, you know, there are people who live on the beach, who live beside the beach, who live within a half a mile's walk of the beach.
Mm.
And those people go down there every day to walk their dogs, usually, and it's their little bit of time with the dog every day. You know, where do they go now?
I don't know. Do you ever watch A Place in the Sun, Kathleen, on the TV?
Yeah.
Like, there's people pick their houses and their location based on how it suits their dog or even their cat sometimes. You know, like, there are people that have probably made decisions on where they live or what have you because of the importance of you know, maybe somewhere to run the dog or that whole lifestyle and all that type of stuff. Like, this is, for some people, incredibly, incredibly important. Banning dogs off the beach would have a really, you know, significant impact on them.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have an awful impact on them because then they're standing thinking, well, what do we do now? You know, we've bought this house, here we are, we live beside the beach all our lives or whatever, we grew up here. We've never had this problem before. Now, all of a sudden, we've nowhere to go. And it leaves them that, say, you're going to have to walk down the road in the middle of traffic with a dog or something that maybe the dog's not even used to. Or, you know, it's not easy walking a dog in traffic because you're watching out for so many things. Nobody has peace. Nobody enjoys it. You need to be able to either go down a beach and let your dog have a lot of fun, or you need to be able to let your dog run in a park somewhere or let your dog, you know, dogs need to run at the end of the day, and people need to enjoy that, and they're more relaxed, and dogs are more relaxed. And after what dogs have given us, I mean, dogs have given us so much, and we can provide nothing for them. I think that's an absolute disgrace.
Okie doke. Thanks very much for your comments, Kathleen. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. All right, what do you guys think? 086 60 25,000. I was on the beach on New Year's Day and had to leave because there were, wait for it, 37 dogs on the beach and only 4 on a lead. I was devastated and left. 37 dogs on the beach. Okay, I thought maybe you'd bump into one now and again. But of those 37, and they spent most of New Year's Day counting, and I don't mean that facetiously, but 37 beaches, 4 on leads, they had to leave the beach because they were scared or uncomfortable or whatever it might be. When is this country going to stop telling people what they can and can't do? This is getting out of hand. It's unbelievable what's going on. Okay, so you could say to people, right, do whatever you like on the beaches. And then a whole swathe of other people, right, don't use the beach because they don't want to. And then you might say, well, if you don't want any beach, that's fine. But it has to be, this feels like a little bit of a hangover from all the conversation we've been having the last couple of years. Have to accommodate people. We can't just have a free-for-all, you know, where everyone does everything, evoking some rule or other that suits them. We have shared spaces, and we do have to, in a modern society, come up with a solution that suits all. But that being said, I dislike legislative overreach. Okay, I don't like that. So I agree with you, but I also recognise there's a problem that needs to be addressed. What about having a designated area on the beach for dogs, depending on the size? Well, you see, if you've got a fear of dogs, it doesn't matter whether it's a tiny little dog. And this is what I think some dog owners don't understand. If you've got a little terrier or you've got a Doberman, if someone's afraid of dogs, they can be equally afraid of both. Greg, enjoying your show. I live in the Drunkeen area. I see people walking their dogs, picking up the poo, but they're throwing it over the hedge into fields where cattle and sheep are grazing. This is not right. If you go so far as to pick up the poo, take it home. I know it's not pleasant, but it's your dog, it's your poo. Take it home with you. Remember, we had the story of people picking up poo and throwing it into a graveyard. They probably thought they were doing the right thing, and I think after it was highlighted, it stopped to some extent. But if you go into the bother of picking the poo up, no one wants to step in poo, walk through poo, push a pram through poo, a walking stick in it. You know, if someone with visually impaired, they might use a stick to find their way. There's no need for an animal's poo to be in public spaces or chucked over a ditch into grazing areas. Will this be a viewing point, or can you get down to the arch in Stony Beach? I asked Councillor Blaney that question. You may have heard his answer, and you can make up your own mind from that. My understanding is you'll be able to access the actual arch. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. On to it now, we welcome Liam Ward, Director of Community Development and Planning Services with Donegal County Council. Liam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
It's great to have you with us. Right, now, the Council has launched a public consultation on the first ever outdoor recreational strategy for the county. I mean, it's great to see it, but I suppose it feels like we're coming to this late, but better late than never, I suppose. I'm not saying we didn't have some sort of a strategy, but this is new in its makeup.
Yeah, no, it's still a fair point to make, Greg. I suppose where we're at the moment is, and everybody be aware that, and certainly highlighted, if you like, because of the COVID pandemic, is the extent to which people now enjoy the outdoors. And I suppose it's important to have facilities and infrastructure in place to allow members of the public in their leisure time, you know, to have those facilities available to enjoy. So I suppose the purpose of this outdoor recreation strategy is really twofold. One is to undertake an audit of the types of facilities and infrastructure that we already have in place. And we're very familiar with, you know, the county in terms of where we have our walkways. And I was listening to your earlier conversation around our beaches and that. And then, as a consequence of that audit, then to set out or to determine, well, where else do we need to go on this? Where else is there gaps out there? And to do that, and I suppose in a meaningful way, where we are taking the views of all the relevant people on board, including the public. I know we'll come to talk about the public consultation events that are going to happen from the end of this month.
So, are we talking about looking after the county, or does that include its people? Like, say, for instance, the secret waterfall, which is no longer a secret, right? Loads of people come to visit that. Cars go up and cars park on the side of the road. That disrupts locals and businesses. So they're obviously going to be upset about that. And then you've got an awful lot of traffic to an area that's not really designed for it. What could be the ecological impact on it? And this, I'm only picking this as an example, so as you know, it's clear what we're talking about. Is that something that would be looked at? Would it be, what's the impact on the people that live here? What's the potential impact on, you know, the natural sort of, you know, nature's infrastructure? Does that kind of thing fall under this this remit as well?
It certainly does, Greg. I suppose you've touched on a number of points there. Clearly, Donegal has an awful lot to offer in terms of the outdoor and in the pursuit of outdoor recreation, an awful lot. We are blessed with this, both the environment, the landscape, our coastal areas. So there is so much here to offer, and obviously that is something that we want to make the most of. But we want to do it in a sustainable manner. And some of the issues that you've touched on there is around traffic management. You know, some of our most beautiful areas are in secluded areas that are really off-road, that are not, the infrastructure is not there to accommodate large numbers of cars or indeed people coming to see them. But there are loads of other areas where that you know, can be managed, and you know, and people are very much welcome to visit. So I suppose, yes, this is a process which is very consultative in nature. We have commenced with a consultation around many of the key stakeholders in the county. And I suppose, who have I in mind there? Well, we're talking about, you know, agencies and groups that have a responsibility in this area, like, for example, culture would be one where there's a lot of forest walks and that. There are numerous other agencies, such as the Outdoor Pursuit Centre at Gartan, just to name two. And then as well as that, we've had a consultation event with all our local representatives through our MD structure. And I suppose that the next stage in this now is going out to the public.
And I suppose, you know, the example I give is almost like you could argue it was leading in something being prohibitive. But this is also about, presumably, you know, if we are to create, you know, sea swimming opportunities or new pathways or new walks or whatever, that it's done in consultation, presumably, and we have a criteria laid out, so we can develop and grow, but do it in a sustainable manner that's good for everyone. So it's not about prohibiting stuff we can do; it's about maybe enhancing opportunities as well. Because I don't want to come at this negative either. Like, there's a ton of opportunity here.
Very much so, and I think that the scope of the outdoor recreation strategy is very broad, and it includes a lot of activities. Like, for example, we've talked about walking. That includes hill walking and hiking. There's cycling, leisure cycling. There's mountain biking, horse riding. But as well as that, there are water-based activities as well, such as canoeing and kayaking and rowing and swimming and surfing and all that. As well as then, we've actually included as well within the scope of the strategy, paragliding and hand gliding, which are obviously air-based. So this is a very broad strategy. And it is important, and I suppose the key thing here is Greg, is that for the first time, what we want to achieve within the county with all our partners around the table is that we have a consensus around the direction we want to travel around creating outdoor recreational infrastructure. There are funding programs available through predominantly through the Department of Rural and Community Development and also through the Department of Transport to provide, you know, the funding to develop, whether it's a walkway, whether it's greenways, whether it's active travel initiatives around our towns and villages as well. So there are opportunities out here. So what the thrust of this strategy is, first of all, let us get a handle on what we have in place and how is that being managed. And then secondly, where are there gaps? Where can further development take place? And how do we plan and manage that in a sustainable way? So that's really what we want to achieve out of this strategy. It's interesting to note as well that currently there's consultation ongoing on a national strategy for the country as well. So while we're out and we're looking after County Donegal with this particular process, there is a national conversation happening as well around a national outdoor recreation strategy. And obviously we would like to think that our strategy will fit in with that as well.
And if anyone's listening and think that this means that everything will be very prescribed, you know, so if you want to have a walk, you have to do it on that greenway, or if you want to paddle your canoe, you do it in that space, you know, so it eliminates the sort of that rambling element that people have, or that freedom. Could this end up shackling us? Could the end game be here that, you know, yeah, you can do everything you like, but you have to do it there, 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 and there? And it sort of goes, you know, maybe that's contrary to what people might see as that outdoor life, that exploring, that, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point, Greg. And I suppose one example, which is, I suppose, really deals with that issue and very clearly, is take, for example, Errigal. A lot of people like to walk up Errigal on an annual basis. Loads of visitors. Great to see it. And obviously, we're working closely with the local community down there on Dunluey. But I suppose part of the challenge for us as a local authority with our partners is, okay, but loads of people walking up the mountain, you know, we have to protect the asset as well. And if people are allowed to walk everywhere, you know, up the mountain and down the mountain, it does get damaged over time. And the asset that is there that we need to protect gets damaged. So what we're doing there through funding received from the Department of Rural and Community Development, and in consultation with the local people, as well as, say, Mountaineering Ireland and other interested parties, we are now going out. We actually have a contractor appointed who will be developing a pathway from the car park at the roadside up by Errigal. So, you know, that the path will be there. People can enjoy the immunity and at the same time protect the environment. And I suppose that's ultimately what we want to achieve.
Yeah, and at the end of the day too, this is at consultation point. So, you know, who's to say what form it will take in its entirety? The important thing is though, that everybody has a say in this, because there's no point landowners or maybe perhaps understandably taking a huge interest in this and their voices being heavily represented, and then others with an alternative point of view not being heard. So there are workshops available. I'll tell you, rather than me go through it, maybe you can explain, Liam, how people between workshops and online forms and what have you can engage with this process and how long they have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And thank you for the opportunity of getting the information out on this. Yeah, we have a series of workshops. They're based on each of the five municipal districts. So they're commencing on Monday, the 31st of January. So they're online consultation workshops at this stage. So the first is in for Inishowen, and it's on Monday, the 31st of January. The following day then, Tuesday, the 1st of February, for Glenties Municipal District. Then Letterkenny Milford Municipal District on Thursday, the 3rd. Stranraer or Lifford Municipal District on Tuesday the 8th of February, and Donegal Municipal District on Wednesday the 9th. Now these events are online because of the current public health guidelines. They're running from 7:30 to 9 p.m. And this is the initial stage of consultation. So we're really out there wanting to seek the views of the public around this, because it is a broad subject area. So we want to see the views, and what we'll be working with then, we'll be taking the feedback from this consultation process and working with our consultants. We have appointed Outdoor Recreation Northern Ireland to work with us in terms of developing this strategy, and they will be facilitating these online workshops. And from that, we will develop a draft strategy. And at that stage, we'll go back out to a further period of public consultation. And I think that's very important. And I suppose we're all hopeful that at that point in time, we will be able to have in-person events. So where we'll be able to display the draft strategy, invite the public in, let them look at what's being proposed or what's in the draft, and see how that, if you like, fits in with their views and whatnot before we go to a stage of formally adopting the strategy. So this is the first public consultation opportunity, but there will be a second one once the draft has been prepared.
Okay, listen, thanks for that. And I presume all those details are available on the council's website as well, just for anyone who wants to sort of didn't catch everything we just outlined there.
Absolutely, Greg. Yeah, it's available on our website. And we really would like to get the message out there that we want to hear from everybody in this. You know, it is about landowners are a very, very key part of it. Absolutely. And so is everybody else who likes to enjoy the outdoors in this county, which has, as I said already, so much to offer.
Yeah, okay. Listen, thanks very much for that. I appreciate your time. That was Liam Ward there. He's Director of Community Development and Planning Services with Donegal County Council, and that process is open to you right now.
The 9 till Noon Show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union. Download our new app today to apply and draw down your loan wherever you are.
At Centra, jumpstart your new year with great offers. Like Centra Portage Oats 1 kilo, only 95 cent. Selected Centra family meals like beef lasagna 1.2 kilo, only 5 euro. And Centra extra lean mince twin pack 660 gram, only 6 euro. Centra, live every day.
Central Auto Parts are now stocking Sony, a water-based paint offering all up-to-date colours for all vehicles. And Celimix Commercial, the perfect paint for diggers, plant and machinery. Buy it today at Central Auto Parts, Portlink Business Park, Letterkenny. Find us on Facebook or call us on 074 9127491.
There's a monster who lives down in the glen, as wide as a tree and as tall as 10 men. But he squashed himself into a teeny old car any time he had to travel somewhere quite far. One day the engine exploded with a cough and a puff, and he finally cried, "Enough is enough. I'll ask the credit union for an electric car loan. I can apply online from the comfort of home." Monster loans from the credit union. Imagine more.
Loans are subject to approval. Terms and conditions apply. If you do not meet the repayments on your loan, your account will go into arrears. This may affect your credit rating, which may limit your ability to access credit in the future. Credit unions in the Republic of Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
When it comes to searching for a holiday, Atlantic Travel and Letterkenny deal with all the major tour operators from Dublin and Belfast to find you the best deals available. A week in the sun, a cruise, or maybe a short break. Whatever suits, you can book in confidence with Atlantic, knowing your holiday is protected should something go wrong. Take the hassle and worry out of your holiday booking with the award-winning Atlantic Travel, St. Oliver Plunkett Road, Letterkenny. For a quote today, see Facebook, visit atlantictravel.ie or call 91 26 193.
In 1971, an elite sales team from Donegal came together with one common goal. That team was Callaghan's Electrical. This team quickly secured the biggest brands and the best prices the county had ever seen. Stocking Rangemaster, AGA, Neff, Lieber, Samsung and LG. So if you need quality products from leading brands and no one else can help, Callaghan's Electrical in Letterkenny and Burt will.
Okay, Manus, good morning to you. What's your view on, I suppose, you know, us enjoying our surroundings, but I suppose at the same time trying not to do damage to them?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all for people having good recreational facilities, so long that it doesn't encroach on the wilderness that we have already. Okay. So if you take, for instance, we have examples of, at the moment, we have gravel pathways, bog roads, as we call them in Donegal. How come we're not talking about utilising those for a start?
Mm-hmm.
Just until we see how things progress. We had a wonderful walk in Hornhead. Never was an issue. Donegal County Council and their wisdom came along and made it a designated walk. We were overrun with people, dogs, not obeying what was laid out, and the walks closed.
But that sounds now, a wee bit like the secret got out and then it became too popular for its own good.
Yes, well, that was my next point. Is we have walkways that we would basically say people can come and use them at the moment. We're going to develop those walkways and in hindsight we'll be saying now they're oversubscribed.
Yeah.
Now the problems arise with cyclists, oversubscribed with walkers and dogs, etc. We need to be very careful.
Then insurance starts coming into it if someone turns an ankle or a dog lead gets wrapped up in a cyclist's front wheel, or then landowners see more traffic and they're saying, hold on, what's my liability here? This is getting a bit too hot to handle.
Yes. The situation is we must remember, tourists, this is a good idea. Recreational ideas are very good in Donegal. Tourism ideas are very good in Donegal, but the situation we must look at is how much of our area must we give over to this?
Mm.
I'm an outdoor enthusiast myself. I go hill walking every weekend. But there are people that seem intent on encroaching in wild areas when it shouldn't be encroached upon. A typical example would be we have a disused railway and the Fakara Railway. Wonderful railway. People came there to see a disused railway, walk on a disused railway, and now we have a greenway. We have plenty of rural tar roads without making greenways through rural places. Mm. I'm all for greenways.
But can I say, Manus?
They have their place.
But Manus, can I say, and I mean this with absolute respect to me, you like to walk where you want to walk, where it's nice and quiet and you can enjoy everything and you know, you can do whatever you can do it. But you then sort of say, well, if lots of people want to do the same thing I'm doing, that's not positive. They can walk on the road. And I'm not trying to be argumentative,
yes,
Manus,
yes,
but it does feel a little bit like that. Do you know what I mean? That you want to keep it on the low down, let locals and yourself use it, but don't let anyone else have access.
No, nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay,
I was one of the very first people that instigated the opening of the Fakara Railway. But it had to be done to a reasonable and sensible degree. Not ranch-style fencing, not tarmac. It had to be kept in line with where it was basically set. Do you understand where I'm coming from? The same thing applies to people wanting to enjoy the countryside. The countryside has to be enjoyed, but we must respect what we're doing to it. There's no point in making walkways where we have walkways. We have a multitude of bog roads that are beautiful in rural areas. They can be utilised.
Yeah, okay, I get you.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I do, 100%. I do. And what we do then is we maintain perhaps what attracts us to it in the first place.
What we have, we can use without encroaching on the wild.
Yeah.
We must keep in mind, you know, there's a Trails Development Officer involved with the County Council, but we must keep in mind the fact that we have to figure out as to what we're doing with these areas that are sustainable.
Yeah, and I think, I think the lockdown has accelerated this conversation
absolutely.
A little bit, because what we're not a secret anymore nationally, and I think this summer, I predict in Donegal is going to be absolutely huge, because all those that came up during lockdown are going to want to come back when there aren't restrictions. And then the rest of us, Manus, you're well experienced at it, but others like me are starting to say, you know what, I live here, the clock is ticking, and I'm not getting out there and seeing what's all around me. So I think everything's been pushed on, Manus, with the course of the last couple of years.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful for Donegal to have such a good, recreational areas and everything else, but we need to be very careful, and apparently at the moment we don't seem to have.
We don't want to kill want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Manus,
the situation, run headlong into it, and love to regret it.
Lovely.
Saying, err on the caution.
Excellent. Okay, lovely to speak to you, Manus. Thank you very
Not
much
a
indeed.
Bye bye.
Okay, so we're going to stay on the issue of how we explore our beautiful region. And we're joined on the programme now by a caller who's... Your name's not there, so we're talking about... Sorry, my apologies. Karen, I beg your pardon, Karen. I have your name now. Right, you're saying that a footpath... Where do you think it needs to be provided, Karen?
I'm on about...
I beg your pardon. We're talking about rubbish on the beaches, right? I've picked up the wrong thing here. You're saying a bigger issue, Karen... is littering on the beaches. Now, I have you on track. I have myself on track. Let's go, Karen.
All right. No worries. Yeah, I'm not getting into the thing about dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs can't speak for themselves. And it's human beings, really, at the end of the day, because we have a bigger issue. Majority of people look after the dogs. They don't want their dogs to annoy anybody else. The dogs are part of the family, so that's like just saying, oh, I'm going for a walk on the beach, but we're leaving one of the kids at home, you know, because the dog becomes another child in the house. But the bigger issue, I'm not getting into all that, take dogs away from the beach. There's a bigger issue, human beings. Human beings don't do what they're supposed to do. They don't pick up their doggy poo. They don't pick up their own rubbish. And you go for walks and beaches, and the rubbish, you, by the time you're into your walk, you'll find rubbish. You could gather rubbish in a bag if you had a bag. And, there's sewage problems, there are pollutants going into the sea still, and, you know, the environmental thing. So we have a beautiful county. And, it's one of the most beautiful counties in Ireland. It's one of the most beautiful counties in the world, one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Mm.
But before we do anything, we have to up the ante on the pollution and the litter, and we have to get some major deterrent, like fines, that people take their own rubbish home. They come to a beautiful place and they should leave it like that.
And Karen, is it a case that really that when we start talking about the dogs, it's an important aspect of it, that's almost a distraction. This is a human problem and all roads lead back to us. When you talk about fines, though, you see, the problem is that we have the most blue flag beaches. We have the most beaches of any county, and we simply don't have the resources to police. Also, before I get you to answer that, have we given up on appealing to people, please love and respect your surroundings, whether it's dumping on a back road, on a bog, or dumping in the beach, or throwing your cigarette butts down on the beach, or your chewing gum? Have we given up on appealing to people?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be, yeah, I think that's gone. Everybody should know that anyway, like, you know, it needs to be zero tolerance now. I mean, you know, they need to up the ante, they have to employ people, if they have to put up big massive signs, like fines will be given out. And it's a terrible thing to say, but if they say, you know, we don't want to report anybody, but like, I mean, and they're probably going to do it when you're not looking, like, anyway, but you need to, I don't know what way you're going to up the ante here, but that we could be talking this conversation every single year.
Yeah, and you know, we're kind of a little bit conditioned with how we've been speaking about the pandemic. The environment is going to be the next big one. That's going to be the big money maker for those who want to retain it, who are motivated by money, and for those also who want to oppose it. That is going to be the next thing. So we're going to struggle to have this conversation even more so, I think, in the few years in advance, because this is where everyone who's currently speaking about other issues, this is where they're going to go to next. And it's going to become very, very, very divisive, Sarah, I predict. Oh, Karen, sorry.
Yeah. And I mean, if everybody did the right thing, and it's not hard, you know, it's not hard to do the right thing.
Well, if we all were individually responsible, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because there'd be nothing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, forget about blaming this or blaming that. Like, you know, this is the bigger, that'll be the issue of the times, yeah. I'm afraid to say.
All right. Okay. Listen, thanks very much for your time. It's been lovely speaking to you. And my apologies for the little bit of confusion at the start. You worked through it very well, better than I did, so I appreciate it. Okay, Karen?
Thanks very much.
All right. And keep enjoying our beautiful county and our beautiful region. Okay, our next guest coming onto the show in just a minute. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. The ad break finishing a little quicker than I thought it might. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Anthony Dugan, who's principal of Mavill Community School. Good morning to you, and thank you so much for joining us, Anthony.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us. And it's actually great to speak to you because you're in a great position to actually see the impact Micah has had across a whole age cohort, you know, across our young people. And you've been moved so much to the point where you've written an open letter on the issue. So tell us why you felt the need to write an open letter. What were you seeing? What needs to be done?
I've noticed in my staff and in my school since last May, the conversation has completely changed. And the whole issue of MICA has become front and center in the staff room conversations. And when we looked, we noticed that there's some people being very vocal that their homes are affected by MICA. But when I actually went and did some research, there's actually over a quarter, about 20 members of my staff have homes affected by MICA. And in the community in Mobile, because we're in one of the most affected areas, that translates into possibly between 100 and 200 students that are affected. So I'm very concerned about the mental health of both staff and students and how this is going to affect them, because some students have their houses already demolished. Some have moved out and are living in rented property while their houses are crumbling as we speak. And then there are many others who face that prospect in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, or 5 years.
And it's difficult for all of them because, you know, if Micheál Martin stood up in the Dáil today and said, right, this is the scheme that everyone wants, it's ready to go, there you are. An awful lot of the challenges remain. In other words, say for instance, a young person, everything they've known in terms of their bedroom and their home taken away from them, the potentially long and arduous process of moving out, demolish, rebuild, moving back in. This is, you know, best case scenario, it's a medium term problem for everyone affected, even if there was the scheme that everybody wanted, Anthony. It doesn't fix everything. We have to deal with this into the medium term. At least,
yeah, there's the logistical issue of actually how do we cope with accommodating so many houses in Donegal that have to be demolished and finding accommodation for those people in a managed way and in a planned way. And separately, we have to manage the mental health of these people, particularly my staff and students, who are going to go through all of this torture. So they're already worried and have high levels of anxiety, and in some cases, depression. So before they possibly don't even have a report yet, because the issue of actually getting on an engineer's list to get their houses checked is now becoming an issue. They have waiting lists for a year. Most engineers around here now have waiting lists for a year, and that causes its own mental unrest and mental difficulties for people. So I'm really concerned about the level of anxiety. We as a school are asked to provide a professional service, and we do that, and we do that very well. But how we move forward to ensure that that continues, with all so many teachers having to have the distraction of having their houses cracking, crumbling, falling up, being demolished, being rebuilt, and at the same time provide a professional service to the students. I have to be concerned about that. Mm. I also have to be concerned about how the students are facing this when their parents are talking constantly about MICA, and this here is affecting them within their home. So they come to school, and it's actually a place where they can escape from the conversation, and it's a safe place. So I want to put services in place that allows them, you know, to do their homework in a safe environment, put on additional facilities after school so that we can ensure that they can get lots of other activities done, mm-hmm. whether it be homework, whether it be social activities, whether it be games, whether it be sport, music, whatever.
So is that almost like mental respite from the crisis?
That is a very good way of putting it.
Yeah.
That we give people the respite from the situation that they have to live 24/7 in their homes, and give them the opportunity to, you know, put on a summer camp for them, so that they can actually just escape and have fun with their peers, rather than have them talk about MICA the whole time, or maybe more accurately, listen to a conversation about MICA the whole time.
Yeah, and then with all the other challenges layered on top of that, these are brilliant young people, but they're having to deal with too much, especially through a pandemic.
Yeah, and like we're talking all of this anxiety on top of all the pressures of COVID, but we're also talking about their future plans and their life chances. We're talking about people whose opportunities to succeed, in most cases here, they have, if they want to go on to third level education, they've got to move out of this area. Mm. You know, they'll be going to Dublin. They might be living in Letterkenny, Sligo, Galway, Dublin, Belfast. Parents have made plans for that. They've started a savings program for that. And now those savings are at risk of being completely diverted, so that the opportunities for the students here are going to be diminished, because they don't have the wherewithal, mm-hmm. in terms of financial resources in order to progress to college straight after school. And it might be at best delayed, mm. and possibly even deprived.
It's a real learning curve listening to this, Anthony, because it really shows, for those who may not be aware, the reach this crisis has into people's lives, and then potentially what it might have going into the future. Is it unfair to me to ask if you can see the impact this is having on people in terms of their ability to learn? I don't know, through tests or what have you, or are you trying to get in early, having already seen the signs? Like, do you know this is affecting people in their studies?
Oh, it most certainly is. I mean, I have English and Irish teachers telling me that their conversations in essays, you know, are coming back about MICA. Mm. That would never have happened before. Mm-hmm. That's not what an ordinary child in a ordinary secondary school actually discusses in their English essay or their Irish essay. There's all of these conversations. Then there's people. What I'm even more concerned about is the people who are quiet and haven't got the confidence to speak about it, and haven't got the language to be able to express their feelings about it. So I'm really concerned that those people who are in a place where they are almost in denial or can't progress in relation to MICA, but it's also depriving the opportunity of progressing in other areas of their academic success or practical class success, where they're being distracted by these thoughts all the time.
Yeah, and that does feed then into anxiety, you know, circulating thoughts in your mind, and then if it's not one thing, then it gets replaced by another. And we can't medicate our way out of this either, you know, and I'm not suggesting that that's what's happening, but, you know, that's often our first port of call. Anthony, obviously, very clearly, you're identifying what's going on here, but, I mean, this is a problem no other school with students not affected by this would have to deal with. You can't do all this yourself, though. Do you need more supports from, say, for instance, the Department of Education or other arms of the state to facilitate some of the things that you've been talking about this morning?
Yeah, I made representations last early June to Donegal ETB and pointed out the situation in my school and made a series of requests to provide, we'd need an additional guidance counsellor, we'd need an additional homeschool community liaison for a period of perhaps 5 years. We want to put on additional facilities for students to be able to do their homework and do their studies and to socialise in a safe place. So we'd be happy to keep the school open to 5, half 5, but we need to get the children home safe. So there's money for buses required, there's after school clubs funding needed, and we're prepared to do that. And we'd also like to do, say, a summer programme, say, a summer camp for people who are affected. So just to give people, as you said, a bit of respite. And so all of those things are requested.
Yeah, and I think what we need to expect is that that this is looked at from outside as a problem that's been identified, but not for it to be grouped into MICA, so that if we raise questions, they don't say, well, we are supporting a service in the area to help people who are having difficulties with MICA. This has to be dealt with separately, I presume, and resourced separately. The issue is MICA, but the problems MICA has created, it has to be looked at and targeted and funded, I think, and maybe, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, sort of separate to the whole MICA redress conversation, for example.
We're already working as a school in a disadvantaged area, and we're dealing with school completion programs and JESH programs and so on. Separately, there is the action group that are seeking, they're arguing finances. I'm arguing community mental health. Mm-hmm. I'm arguing for providing to try and assuage the mental health and mental health difficulties that are affecting my community, both staff and students, and by extension, the families of the students who attend this school, in order to try and create, you know, a better society and a more caring society for them at this incredibly difficult few years in their lives.
Okay. And as well as that, too, your letter, obviously, it's quite clear that you have a very strong point of view and a very detailed read on the crisis as it relates to, you know, if you're a homeowner and who's responsible and who's to pay for this and the whole conversation around that.
Yeah, the question is who's responsible. And, you know, there are many different people who are walking away from the responsibility, whether it be the producer of the product, whether it be the people who built the houses, to insurance companies, the banks, the mortgages. People are now paying mortgages and they can't get any more money because their asset was their home. And then separately, I'm thinking, like, this isn't about somebody's house. This is about somebody's forever home. So it's much, much more emotional than just money. And I'm not, it's for other people. I'm not affected directly, personally. The money factor is not an issue for me personally. But professionally, I can see a huge amount of effects happening to my staff and my students. And it's the whole emotional thing that we must also address. And it's for somebody else to argue the case for how much is sufficient.
I understand. Finally, I mean, there has to come a point where, you know, you're concerned about staffing levels maybe or staff being out for one reason or another, or if they decide to move on recruitment. We're not at that point yet, are we? Or do you fear that could be an issue down the line?
No, well, at the moment, we're in the throes of a massive absenteeism of staff due to COVID.
Yeah.
But the you know, there will be effects on the effectiveness of staff and the effectiveness of students to learn and staff members to teach. And we need to be able to provide the supports that allow staff to give them the counselling, to give them the support that they need in order to be able to box that off so that when they go into the classroom, they're delivering their professional service. Mm-hmm. And so that I'm looking for additional counselling support for the staff as well as for the students.
And is it possible that if a scheme is announced in February and that campaign element of it, which was hugely important and hopefully hugely successful, that we might move to another stage where obviously the problems are there and people have to deal with them individually, but it might be less all-consuming, that in a way may sort of help to diffuse a little bit of this stress and anxiety. Finally, Anthony.
Yeah. If we have a clear and coherent plan that caters for everybody or the vast majority that can sign up to that their plan, then obviously stress levels will reduce. What I'd be most afraid of is that every individual homeowner is left to do all their negotiations themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Listen, it's been very interesting and educational as well, Anthony, talking to you to get an insight into, you know, how deep the roots of this problem can go and where they can go. So thank you very much for that. It's greatly appreciated, and keep up the great work.
So thank you. You're very welcome.
Take care of yourself. Okay. Wasn't that interesting? People acutely aware who are living it, but Anthony sees the impact when something is so widespread amongst the community, its impact on the teachers, the teaching cohort, and not only those that are directly affected, but of course then, you know, that sort of seeps through those to those, of course, who are not directly affected. And the essays and work coming back from students as it relates to, you know, English essays, essays in Irish, and Micah keeps coming up. You know, it's really interesting, and I hope he gets the support, because he's proactive. That's a pillar of the community there, by the way. He's been proactive in saying, look, we need to sort out a bit of mental respite in the evenings, summer camps, something to look forward to, something else. All right. OK, listen, that's interesting. Back after these. Anyone who was on social media yesterday, or indeed for the last number of days, would know that obviously people are very deeply and emotionally affected by the awful murder of Aisling Murphy. And of course, in terms of a process, someone being arrested, being charged or appearing in court, we have to follow very, very strict guidelines in that regard. And the reason those guidelines are laid down, and I'm going to be joined by a barrister who could probably explain it better than I, is to ensure due process, to ensure that people get a fair trial, or even the family of victims, that they also get a fair trial in the right outcome coming to pass. On social media, you know, sub judice, I believe, and Peter Nolan will correct me if I'm wrong, also extends to social media. And what we write online can actually have an impact on a trial and its outcome. Peter Nolan, barrister, good morning to you. Thanks for joining me.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Right. Talk to me about sub judice. What is it? Where does it cover, and what's it for?
Well, it's to cover, as you said in your opening, the process of due process of law, which is a process that has been in place for hundreds of years that balances the rights of the accused with the rights of the prosecutor, and that certain things can be said, certain things cannot be said. So, for example, in our jurisdiction, the name of the person is given, but that's it. In Britain, before somebody is arrested, for example, they give the name. Our system, in my view, is far, far safer. Now, you saw in this particular case, an individual was arrested, and all kinds of things were assumed. The first person was arrested was assumed about that person, which turned out to be incorrect. The second person that's been arrested, he's now been charged, which puts him in a different category. He's now charged with an offence, and therefore, in due process, the media and other people are allowed to mention his name, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And where he resides, that's all.
Right.
Not a mention of anything else after that.
And I want to say, and I know you don't use social media much, Peter, but in terms of I don't want this to all be about social media, the mainstream media themselves, who must abide by the strict guidelines that I mentioned earlier, when there was an initial person arrested, let themselves down very, very greatly.
And
the press ombudsman come out to their defence very much in the wrong, because it were they that whipped up speculation.
I couldn't agree more.
Sorry, Peter. I just wanted to make sure so people understand that I recognise that the mainstream media, in inverted commas, let themselves down, and their colleagues and people like me who wouldn't have done what they did, they let them down by whipping up public anger. Right, so on to...
I agree with you, but the problem with that is, just I won't go off the point, the person who was the subject matter of that whipping up has no right of reply. That person goes off, and the media have said whatever they've said, now is out there. He's down. I have no doubt that that individual is considered to be somewhat of a pariah now in Tullamore. Asher, there's no smoke without fire. Sure, you know, Asher, this. That's the damage it does to somebody who has no right of reply and no comeback.
Mm-hmm.
There was no defamatory thing said about that man, but he was put in a position where there was implications and speculation and an aura placed around him, which he can never escape from after the media have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my huge, huge concern. That's why we have due process. That's why we have the limitations we have on reporting.
Yeah.
For that very reason.
And further to that, widely circulated image on Facebook and speculation on Facebook as to a second party, not the one that's been charged, and their role on it, who had no act or part in this at all either. Now, Peter, people could be listening and going, how could you defend this person? Okay, we'll wait until to find out what comes of the trial. But this is not about defending an individual, is it, Peter? This is about defending the process. And this is really more to ensure that whatever happens, or whomever is found responsible, that the Murphy family get justice. This is about protecting justice for them. This isn't about necessarily protecting an individual.
Yeah, the worst thing that could happen here if a trial proceeded on the basis of emotion and total sympathy without looking at the facts and the rational aspects of it, and the basis of the laws of evidence were not applied, the Murphy family then would find themselves facing an appeal and various other things that would occur. I'm sure the same question was asked of Gareth Pearce. Well, how are you defending these bombers, these Birmingham Six? But how could you possibly defend these people? Was no doubt asked of her. And she defended them and was vindicated. And if there's one false conviction, that to me, the system cannot have that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to have faith in the system, that due process has been applied, that the laws of evidence and the laws of trial have been applied. Now, my own experience, and I do a lot of criminal trials, the judge now has to warn the jury, and he does warn the jury about social media, do not Google this man's name. So, John O'Brien, for example, he is accused, and he warns the jury when they leave for the first day that not to do that. Now, there's no control over that.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if John O'Brien has previous convictions, it may come up on Google. It may come up, and you have to understand something about me. I have absolutely no time for what I call on social media. It's not social media, it's on social. I have no time for Facebook. I have no time for Twitter or all of these pointless money-making applications.
And I get that, Peter, but in its defence, it is an opportunity for people to drive their own news agenda, to have their say. And you know, it has given people a voice and a platform. There's a lot of toxicity on there, but there's a lot of good there. But I fully respect where you're coming from. But, Peter, when there is something like this that is so abhorrent, that has angered the public on such a deep level, right?
Yeah.
There has to be some latitude, doesn't there? I mean, people are going to comment and speak on social media. There has to be, I presume that the system can flex to accommodate the inevitable, which is what people are doing. They're saying this is a disgrace, you know, hope they throw the book, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to be part of it. I'm choosing my words pretty carefully, but I'm trying to give examples of what people might say in scenarios like this. It's going
to
happen.
Don't they just leave it to the legal process to do its job? And I can assure you the legal process will do its job. The investigative process is what started. The legal process hasn't started. All we have at the moment is an investigation of a crime. A book of evidence will be produced, and then the legal process will start based on that book of evidence. At the moment, the guards are the investigative arm of the state. They are carrying out their duties, carrying them out very well, it would seem to me, in this case. But that's the, so. In, as such, they have their job to do. Yeah. They will do their job. They will pass it on to the DPP, and then the legal aspects will start to roll. Then, so the system has been there all these years. Now people got turning up outside a police station, and all the rest of it. I've had this in my own experience in Donegal, famous case, a murder case years ago, where people turned up outside the district court in Donegal town. Myself and my solicitor, Mr. Dorian. Who God rest him, who died recently, were literally spat at, verbally abused. We went, the guards protected us as best they could. And this was only for the arrival of this individual who was charged with the murder of his wife for the purposes of remanding him in custody. And I attended for that purpose because it was a murder case. So the situation is, that is, to me, unforgivable. That's mob rule.
Yes, but Peter, there's the emotion, though. Like, say, for instance, the scenes we saw last evening. I hope anyone that knows me or listens to this program regularly will know I'm not defending any individual, right? But the Gardaí advertised what time and the location of that court appearance. What was to happen was inevitable. Passions were running incredibly, incredibly high. They didn't seem to plan how to get people in and out of that court building. So at the end of the day, you know, people are so, so passionate. Sorry, they're going to express that. And you saw that firsthand, and unfortunately what you experienced. But hey, they could have handled this differently to avoid that scenario.
I agree with you, but the thing is, the way it has to work is that you have to assume that persons are innocent until proven guilty, and that's the basis of our system, whether you like it or not. And most of the time, that assumption, if a jury trial is fought, a lot of the time that assumption is set aside that the person is not innocent.
But just in fairness to them, again, can I go to the mainstream media here? In advance of this person being charged, everything was out other than his name.
Absolutely.
His condition, where he was located, the fact that he required a lift, the fact that there was DNA evidence, the fact that there was injuries, the fact that how many children he had, his place of birth. All of that information had been put out, bar his name, by the mainstream media out there. So, in other words, someone could look at last night and be of the opinion, going by the media, the mainstream media coverage, that the case was closed.
That's correct. So, and therefore, sure, that's at the end of it, because it's a media trial by media as such. Now, also the other question, I think, and I'm not going off the point here, is where do the media get that information from? They don't get it from the accused. Where do they get it from? And that's another thing I'd be very anxious to look at. In all of these high-profile cases, the media seem extremely well-informed and never give the source of their sources. There's only one source I can see where it comes from.
Which is not permitted.
The only people that know all of these facts at that particular time are the Garda Síochána.
Yeah, but there are that is not... Garda are precluded by law passing on that information.
I know that, but that's why I'm saying I'd be very anxious to know where the media got it from.
Well, I think, you know, you've solved that case, Peter.
You know what I'm saying? It's just
I understand.
There needs to be some restrictions on that, too. Look, I have the greatest sympathy for this. A beautiful young girl's life snuffed out for no reason whatsoever, it seems to me. I have the greatest sympathy for her family and anybody connected to her and that particular girl. And it's affected me emotionally as well. I have a daughter. I don't know how I would face that. But the thing is, as a lawyer, we have a system in place that we have a thing called due process. We have a court of law. We have 12 people who are going to sit in the jury, if it ever gets to a jury. And if that, because the problem with murder is, if you plead guilty to murder, it's a mandatory life sentence. If you have nothing to lose by fighting a case of murder, something might go wrong. You know,
how might a defence? How might the defence use public commentary in a defence in any given case? Will not be too specific.
Only if prejudice can be shown. You know, it's very
would that be in terms of jury selection, or how would one try and
our system again is you cannot. You might watch American law shows where they question jurors and all that is not allowed here.
Mm-hmm.
What you get here is the name of the juror, the occupation of the juror, and the address of the juror in a list. That's it. And you have 7 objections to that juror without cause. In other words, you don't have to show any cause, and 7 with cause. In other words, if you know, for example, the juror was on in the newspapers last week talking about certain things that are important in the case. But that's all you have. Whereas in America, they actually quiz the jurors about, for example, what do you think of foreign nationals, you know, things like that. They could ask all those questions, and then on the basis of the answers they receive, it takes weeks to pick a jury for a major case in America. It takes 45 to minutes to an hour in Ireland to do so. So that's all you have.
But and sorry if I'm borrowing from the programs that you reference. I don't watch too much of them. But in terms of an appeal, right, which would prolong victim's family's turmoil, could an argument be made even after that that, well, listen, you know, because of the public conversation that was happening, the jury pool was, you know, was contaminated?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
And that's what we're trying to avoid then.
Yeah, but that's the point. That has happened, and that has been, as you well know, there has been issues like that. There has been the famous, that unfortunate case again of the young girl being murdered in Lucan. Names were pretty, all of these things. The social media. Now, I actually have no access to social media. Purposely, I don't want access to it. I've nothing. No, I don't. I'm not connected in any way to it. So I can't really comment on what's on social media. What I can say is that there should be no comments that would indicate the guilt concerning the guilt or innocence of a particular accused. I have no problem with comments of sympathy towards the family of the unfortunate victim. I have no problems with any of that, and indicating their disgust at the situation. No problems with that, but when it's particularised and focused on a particular individual who may or may not be guilty of this offence, I have a huge problem with that. Okay.
Just I noticed just on social media from we'll use national media for example, from the likes of RTE. You know, News Talk, all the national media, they've posted the story and they've left comments on, and then obviously underneath the story, it's a free-for-all of people saying whatever they wish to say. I'm surprised at that. What is the legal responsibility, I wonder, or do you know, Peter, in terms of, what's the word, in terms of policing, I suppose you could say, the responses underneath a post like that on social media?
I don't think anybody. The legal responsibilities in this whole area are extremely opaque. It seems to me that Facebook and the providers of these services must bear the brunt of any legal responsibility in relation to defamation, dissemination of false information, etc. Now, there's already an issue of that, I believe, in certain inquiries into Facebook in America and some whistleblowers from Facebook are indicating that they've promoted this kind of situation. To allow people onto social media to make comments of which they have absolutely no knowledge of, it's the same as sitting on a bus listening to some fella talking about the match next hour. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
All it is a valve for these people to vent whatever spleen they may have in relation to a particular accused person. Now, I've no problem people on social media to, as I said before, to indicate their sympathy, to indicate their support for the family of the murdered girl. I've no problem with any of that. But it's when persons use a particular situation for their own agenda, which is either racist or sexist or misogynistic or whatever, that I have a huge problem with. Mm. And that's the level, unfortunately, of debate I am aware of on social media.
Okay.
That point, that is not debate. That is not forwarding. That is just gossip of the lowest and purient kind that if I heard somebody saying it face to face, I would tell them to shut up and keep quiet.
Okay, Peter
but
Nolan,
you
listen.
You can't do that on social media, unfortunately.
Thank you, as always, for your insight. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Peter Nolan, barrister there. And just to be absolutely clear, and I hope it is clear, the purpose of that conversation is to ensure, as best as we can, our personal responsibility is to ensure that the Murphy family get justice, and that justice then their agony is eternal, but the agony of the trial and reliving that is not then extended, you know, by way of giving grants for an appeal or whatever it might be. And that's the function of that conversation. So we all understand, I understand what the consequences of posting a presumed conclusion might have on social media. Okay, now let's get to some of your comments here. This is an important one, actually, from Margaret. And I was talking yesterday about, we're talking about reopening, and it's fantastic, and it's not taken away from any sector, but there's very important things like Cash on the Call, which provides a very important service for its service users and their families, which is still closed, okay? These are the things we also need to be talking about opening, living with, and getting these places open. But Margaret says, still no sign of Cash on the Call opening. Those who are classed as priority one are getting their service, but unfortunately for the rest of the people who attend this service are being discriminated against and not allowed to attend. Instead, the HSC send the parents €10 an hour to pay somebody to take their disabled son or daughter for a couple of hours a day. How are people with disabilities being so ignored when the rest of the country seems to be able to get back to normal? It's shameless. And I think I would have to agree. Another, Mary says, when is Cash on the Call Learning Disability Centre going to reopen? The HSE are neglecting their responsibility to all the people who attended. We are getting on to the HSE and chasing them up to try and get an answer for you. What about a footpath between Dunfanaghy to Port na Blá and Downings to Carrigart? Very busy tourist areas in the summer with lots of people walking on the roadside between the locations. What about road safety? That comes in from Charlie. Well, there is now a walkway, that has been okayed between Downings and Carrigart. I can't talk really to Dunfanaghy and Port na Blá, but half of your concerns are being addressed there. Dog fouling, who's going to police this? There's no one policing the issue of dogs off their leads either on the beaches or in the towns. It's, I don't know, how do we sort it out? Hopefully that new pathway will be finished to a better standard than the footpath at Illistrin to the mountain top. It is, I've drove past that and looked in and I was surprised to see that that was it finished. I don't want to upset anyone, but I'm not going to lie to you. I thought, right, okay, that's it finished, okay. Do Home Helps qualify to vote for the €1,000 bonus? Home Helps are people who care for people in the community. I'm not sure about that, and I'm not sure everything has been announced in relation to that, so I don't want to yay or nay it. No mention of the childcare workers who had to look after children during the pandemic. I made some comments yesterday about how we judge a school's success as it relates to their students going on to third level or whatever. But this caller says, Greg, I couldn't agree with you more about snobbery in schools and jobs. My son left school at 16, much to the disgust of some of his teachers. He's now a lorry driver, and while talking to one of those teachers recently, he discovered he's earning nearly €200 more than them each week. So education isn't everything. But he is educated. Education in the traditional sense isn't. And I think we are agreeing in that, you know, he got his basics in school, perhaps even more than that, and then went on to do an important job. The lorry driving, everything relies on that. Everything. It's a hugely important job, and they're in huge demand. And I think their salaries are reflecting that as well, at least in some cases. I'm self-employed and I have 6 people employed. While this might be great news, this is the bank holiday for employees, where am I, as the employer, going to get the money to pay these men this extra money? There is no support for me to do this. So while I had budgeted to allow for one day in March, now I have to eat into my minimal profit again to pay another. Once businesses have taken a massive hit this last 2 years, now we get another blow. I can exactly see where you're coming from, and I did allude to the SMEs in particular. That solicitor needs to move with the times and accept that social media, rightly or wrongly, is here to stay. I think it is in its current form. Facebook, its users are dropping off. People are going to Instagram, where it's more picture-based and less opinion. And those then who really want to express opinions, but feel that they're hindered in doing so by social media, going to the likes of Telegram. I'm not quite so sure that social media, as we know it right now, is here to stay. I think people are being, I think people are feeling bombarded with negativity on social media, and that's why they're going to the likes of Instagram and TikTok, where it's more, you know, lighthearted. And then those that, you know, have very strong views that go outside the likes of Facebook's guidelines, they're leaving as well, and they're going to the likes of Instagram, Telegram. So I don't know. I think that's a separate point to what Peter was saying and what you're saying, but I actually think we're going to see some quite significant changes in social media pretty soon. Punishment and fines won't work, re-rubbish and dog poo on beaches. Put more bins at the beaches and make it easier for people to do the right thing. That's a really good point. You know what? We can look at people and blame people, but we have to have the infrastructure there to allow them to do the right thing. The problem with rubbish and dog litter on the beaches is down to our Irish attitude to enforcement. We know there is no effective enforcement. When Irish people go abroad on holidays, they pick up their litter and out and put it in the bins provided, which are empty daily. Try leaving the rubbish behind on a Mallorcan beach and see how far you get. We need enforcement to force a change in attitude. An interesting point. I visit Lisfannan Beach regularly, often see people enjoying their dogs, destroying birds' nests. Some of these birds are rare, plus ducks soon. We will have none. Shame on the council. Won't do anything because the most of them have dogs. All right, listen, more comments. It was a very busy show in terms of you taking part comments-wise. We'll get to them tomorrow, any I didn't get to. Our Friday panel, we've a lot to discuss between 9 and 10 with our Friday panel tomorrow, don't we? We also talk entertainment with Fionnuala and Michael between 11 and 12 and much more besides. So rejoin us tomorrow at 9. Stay tuned today for John Breslin coming up around the Northwest after 12. But for me, Greg and Caroline, enjoy the rest of your Thursday.